Welcome to the Taylor Report. We got a big program coming up. We'll listen to a little bit to Blind Willie Johnson to set the tone.
Well, if I had my way, if I had a whole week of fun, if I had a Lord just built it down. Well, I don't want a woman, fine, fair, a pleasant look, a cold black hair. All the game goes down to mine. I first saw the woman, I looked so fine. Where they went, Timothy, I can't tell. A daughter of Timothy, I play that well. A time I told his father, I'm going.
Me Lord, if I had my way, well, if I had a wicked one, if I had a long time building down. Well, replied to him, can't you find a woman of your kind and kiss? Samson, where you please, your mother's mind.
Go that's, and a, man, that's a voice man, of Blind Willie Johnson. The reason I want to play a little bit of Blind Willie Johnson, of course, is the fact that he performed that song. He played on the streets of Houston, Texas, mainly. He was also a lot in Louisiana. He was blind, and this is how he earned his living. And one day he sang that song, and the police came and arrested him because he was standing in front of a federal building singing, "If I Had My Way, I'd Tear This Building Down," a song about Samson. And the police thought that was pretty dangerous, so they took him away. He was one of the great voices, one of the great victims of racism, too. And when Blind Willie Johnson developed a pneumonia after a house fire. He was in the street and it was raining and he got very ill. And of course he was not accepted in the hospital in Houston and he died. So we lost an immense talent. And of course the whole story of the hundreds of years of slavery and official legal segregation under Republicans and Democrats robbed us of all kinds of talent, all kinds of brilliance. America had cut off its own foot in the name of bigotry. So we're going to be talking in a little bit with, among other people today, we'll be talking to Norman Richmond about, he saw the film Detroit, and of course he remembers Dick Gregory. We're going to talk a little bit about Dick Gregory. And there are some other urgent issues. The first thing that I want to say today to get after is Charlottesville and the American Republic. I think I have to check something. Do we have Norman on the line? Well, if so, let us we're going to readjust this a little bit. Norman, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining us. I was just mentioning it how much we've lost with black talent and black intelligence and black muscle and everything else because of bigotry, slavery, and all the other accumulated sins that go with American history. And now we're experiencing the Charlottesville thing and people trying to analyze it and discussing statues, the rise and fall of statues, and who's your favorite statue and where to put it or shall we knock its head off, and kind of important issues. When I spoke with you over the weekend, we were discussing these matters, and one of the people you mentioned was Omalie Yesitela, who had been arrested once many years ago. He was had been a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, but he was involved in an incident where a caricature of black Americans in Florida was destroyed or attacked, and I guess he would be identified as the perpetrator. I ask you to tell us the story, but he ended up serving 2.5 years. Can you tell us his story and what happened?
This was in 1966. At that time, Omalie Yesitela was Joe Weyer, and he was with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, same organization that Stokely Carmichael, who later became Kwame Ture, and H. Rap Brown, who today is Imam Jamil Al-Amin, and he's in prison right now. there was a character of a singer on the wall, and you know, I hear O'Malley tell the story that they had basically said it was basically a singer, and it was the old Sambo buffoon, you know, the whole stereotypical scene. And O'Malley issued Teller led a demonstration, and something happened, and he tore the mural down. And as a result of that, he spent many years in prison for that.
Well, I think 2.5, right?
2.5 years.
Because, and by the way, this we're not talking about a work by Picasso. This is just somebody's decoration on a wall, right, in a public place.
Well, let me say, this is what the mayor said. I find nothing offensive in the portrayal of strolling troubadours and picnickers at a beach. I think you know that I personally am not a racist. I think that all of our minority groups must mature to the point where self-consciousness is not a motivating factor for complaint. End of quote.
Yeah. That was the mayor of, was it St. Petersburg?
St. Petersburg, Florida. And O'Malley, like you said, he spent 2.5 years.
They've always been in the vanguard of recognizing human rights, so, you know,
right. You
can't trust the mayor of St. Petersburg. What kind of a trial could that have been?
If you go to YouTube and type in O'Malley Ishitella, you can probably find him doing the whole, he explains the whole ordeal. Mm-hmm. How it happened, what happened when he was in prison, how he became, he leaves the African People's Socialist Party and the African Socialist International, and there he's all over YouTube. You can find it. He explains that word for word, and he goes into what happened that day, what he did in prison,
mm-hmm.
What happened when he came out of prison. And, you know, like I was listening to radio the other day, and there was a situation in Martinique. Formerly, I guess Martinique, to be perfectly honest, is still colonized by the French. But the people in Martinique took down a statue of one of the queen or somebody, whoever, and took the head off. And that statue is still there in 2017. Also,
so they just removed the head and left the statue.
The statue's still there. Yes.
Yes. And like the Shah's boots are still in Tehran.
Right.
The statue is gone.
The same thing happened. Mm-hmm. I think there was there's a statue of Cecil Rhodes, and they have destroyed it or attempted to destroy it. So this is a movement that it's going to grow.
Uh-huh.
I even saw something in the paper today that they're talking about. I think it was in one of the right wing papers here that somebody might go up to John McDonald. What's his name?
John A. John A.
Yeah, because he was not. He wasn't the most.
Not at all. He had a word, by the way.
Person.
Yeah, he had a word. Only one word for the president of the union during the time of the rebellion by slave owners. He called Abraham Lincoln the Beast. The Beast. Which, by the way, I mean, just to show, he didn't make it up. That was a common term. As you know, during the Civil War, Lincoln was portrayed as black or like an animal. And that was the general notion was that he just wasn't, you know, sufficiently, had not become a true white person, and therefore he was, you know, primitive. Anyway, John A., yes.
Well, you know that.
But I don't know if people are unhappy with him.
Justice Rogers wrote a book called 5 Negro Presidents. General Augustus Rogers was a Jamaican-born historian, and he claimed he gave Abraham Lincoln honorary African status.
Yeah.
I guess he was the first black president before Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he did not play the saxophone, unfortunately. This is Norman Otis Richmond. And Norman, well, last question about O'Malley Yesitila, who But at the time of his arrest, he was known as Waller, right? Did we get that?
Joseph Waller.
Waller, and he had been student nonviolent coordinating.
Go ahead.
Now, do you know if he has said anything, or been commenting on this question of the incidents at Charlottesville and other, and the question of the statuary?
He's on like every Sunday, and I haven't listened to him, and I've been kind of my computer's not up to par. But I'm certain he would have commented on it, of course.
Yeah.
Well,
we should. You know, I think I'm glad you called our attention to him and his experience. We forgot to mention something else. He lost his right to vote.
But he got it back.
Yeah, and it took him 20 years or something to get his right to vote back.
That's right.
This is an important aspect of why we are attacking white supremacy. And the concept of, you know, the glorious South and the, you know, the it's as a culture. It's a culture, the racist culture that was developed there by admirers of the slave owners has always had the idea of exclusion. Any excuse they can find to deprive people of their rights, they grab it. And they one of the reasons good people have a hard time getting elected in the South is that in many of the states they have taken away the rights of black people to vote. Anybody goes to prison, any felony, they lose their rights.
Say this, Phil, that right now there's a young man by the name of Jesse Neville, the Euro-American. He's running. He's in the Uhuru Movement, which is the support group for the African People's Socialist Party. He's running for mayor, and there was a young woman, Akila, I believe her name is. Mm-hmm. Forgive me for messing it up, but mm-hmm. Akila is running for city council, so they're still involved in electoral politics, and they actually supported when Cynthia McKinney was running for president. They supported Cynthia McKinney, as I did, and I remember mm-hmm. I got jumped on by Bill Fletcher. He jumped on me about supporting Cynthia McKinney, right?
Uh-huh. Now. We have to ask you about another matter. I was going to introduce it this way. Jerry Lewis died, so let's talk about Dick Gregory. I was glad to see the New York Times today ran a quote from Dick Gregory on its front page, certainly on the internet if you go there, which said black Americans have developed a callous from all the beatings and all the mistreatment, you can't hurt us anymore because we've got a callous. And then they noted that he had been beaten in 1963 in Alabama. So tell us what your memories of Dick Gregory, where he fits in the struggle.
In 1963, I visited Gremlin, Louisiana, and I stayed with my aunt and uncle, Helen and Milton Kelly, and I was still in my teens, and Dick Gregory was going to be on the Jack Parr Show, and, you know, the Jack Parr Show came on, I guess, 11:30, so, I mean, I wasn't that young, but I wasn't that old either, so my aunt basically says, if you want to step, you can step and you can watch Dick Gregory. Mm-hmm. But my position was, but of course, because, you know, at that time, Dick Gregory was like, first of all, there was very few black people on TV at that particular time.
At
and a
all.
Lot of people listening to the show can't even realize what I'm talking about. So to see a so-called Negro on TV, mm-hmm. live and in living color in 1963, that was big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was going to be on the Jack Parr Show, and my aunt says, okay, you can stay up. They call me Earl. Okay, Earl, you can stay up and watch Dick Gregory. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching the Jack Parr Show, and Dick Gregory is introduced, and as soon as he came on, they turned the sound off.
Yeah.
And as soon as he finished, they turned the sound back on.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I saw him.
So that I guess we'd have to see the local power for that state is whoever the brass was in that part of Louisiana had the power to just turn off that while he was speaking.
I think they did that all over the South, but it would have been coming from either.
Well, that's a tradition. Yeah, it is a country. It's part of tradition.
Yeah, it would have been Shreveport or Monroe. Those were the major towns, and Grambling was a college, all black college town. But the power was in Ruston, where Bill Russell and his brother were from. Ruston, or it would have to come from Ruston, Shreveport, or Monroe. Because Grambling was just a little college town.
Uh-huh.
And the next time I remember seeing Dick Gregory, he was speaking for the John Howard Society at Massey Hall. And he made the statement that he talked about the Nobel Peace Prize. I remember he made the statement that Nobel was the man who invented dynamite, and they named the Nobel Peace Prize after him. I remember my good friend Elone B. Brath was kind of mad at Dick Gregory about making that statement, because he says Nobel was not creating dynamite for war purposes; it was for something else. But yeah. And then Dick Gregory had a relationship with Bob Marley. There's a lot of pictures with Bob and Dick Gregory together. And he was a stand-up guy in terms of the standing up for the system, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I guess he set the stage for Richard Pryor, Paul Mooney, David Chappelle, Marshall Warfield, because they've had men and women comedians that have had social consciousness. That, you know, Dick Gregory was known for humor, but his humor was politically conscious and socially conscious. And, you know, he broke the whole thing about being a buffoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the system likes a black comedian if the joke is always on your own people. But Dick Gregory's jokes were always about the system and the people that sold us out.
Uh-huh. As I can recall, actually, as you say that, he once was invited to make a criticism of Step and Fetch It. And he said he wouldn't do it because he said Step and Fetch It was trying to earn a living. He said, and while he wouldn't do that, and it's easy, he said, for me to say now. But he said, you got to remember, there was a time when we were not allowed to be on stages at all unless we did these things. And he said, Stephen Fetchett didn't want to starve, you know. And therefore, he wasn't in. A guy was invited him to attack. He said, I'm not going to attack Stephen Fetchett.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe Stephen Fetchett, at the end of his life, he was working with Muhammad Ali, and I think Stephen Fetchett had joined the Nation of Islam.
You know something? You got that is the should be the title of an essay. Stephen Fetchett has joined the Nation of Islam. That is, I'm sure you're right, by the way. I'd heard this too. As a matter of fact, there are many stories about, you know, his actual identity and his own and his personality. But Gregory helped us as a stand-up comedian, and that's somebody who thinks in public, you know, right in front of people, and puts challenging ideas. He helped us understand that period, the minstrel business that has gone on in American culture, going all the way back. I want to ask you, I want to make sure we talk about this. This is Norman Otis Richmond, and I know that you've seen the film Detroit, which there's a lot of talk about it. And my understanding, that has to do with what we used to call the Algiers Hotel incident, or was it Algiers Motel?
Yes.
I lived through that time. I remember it, but I never knew the details of it. And so I know you followed it closely. What do you make of this film? You saw it? Give us your, how many stars will you give it, if any?
I give it like one star for it begins with my favorite singer, David Ruffin, singing Losing You with the Temptations, so I could hear David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks on top. And then they play, and you get into the film, they play John Coltrane. But after that, it is, it's basically a white woman doing this black film. Mm-hmm. And I might upset some people by saying this, and I'm not saying that a white person cannot produce a black film. I'm saying that this white woman can't do that. She is a woman that has tried, failed, strike one. You know, the American military, and it's a there's so much violence, mm-hmm. and. You know, African people, and it's almost like a Donald Trump type analysis where both sides were wrong. You know, they have this black guy shooting a fake gun and three or four times, and then that's the reason why the cops came and surrounded the place and started shooting up the place. And it's a very violent, brutal film, and I think the guy who played the chief, the police, should win an Academy Award. When I say when he played the one that was calling the shots was just an ordinary officer. I mean, he was not he wasn't in charge of anything, but he basically took over the situation and he was very brutal. I mean, he should get the role he played was like a devil, and he was Lucifer personified. Uh-huh. Yeah. But they call him in Arabic. He's Shaitan, Lucifer. He was the devil.
Yeah.
And
you know, it sounds like you mentioned. I mean, Hollywood gives we're talking about using the big bucks. By the way, we're getting a little feedback. I don't know if you might be moving your phone or if we're having trouble here. I can't tell. Okay, it's clear now. I spoke into the static. My apologies. Now they spent the money. They've given, this woman director who had already done a film about Iraq that was a lot of people didn't like that one. Because, you know, it always ends up glorification of military or misrepresentation of the issues. The money's been spent. The name Detroit's all over it. So, for example, if Spike Lee wanted to make a film, they'd say, no, Spike, come on, that's already done, right? I mean, these things block out the real thing.
Yes. It's like Bobby Seale wants to do a film on the Black Panther Party, and there's already been a film about the Black Panther.
There you go. Can't do that.
It was good. Mario Van Peebles and Melvin Van Peebles. Mario, the younger Van Peebles, did a pretty – well, he did a good job, but mm-hmm. – Bobby Seale probably won't be able to make another Hollywood film. And also the film that Mario made, it was low, low, low budget, and people did him favors for playing in the film, you know. So
yeah.
they wanted Tom Cruise to be the star of the film on the Black Panther Party. Just that's why they didn't give him the big money.
I'm sorry. Who wanted – you mean Bobby Seale wanted Cruise?
No, Hollywood wanted
– Oh,
Mario Van Peebles when you go for your funding, I guess you go for, you know, the corporate corporate white folks with the money. So yeah. They went to the corporate white folks with the money and they told him, we will give you the money with the proviso that you have Tom Cruise starring in the film.
Yes.
And of course they said no.
Yeah. They do dictate. I was reading the account by Clancy Siegel of Hollywood. I always mention it now, called Black Sunset. But he talks about how all the writers there sit in a room, and the guy who owns the company comes in and says, "I want this, I want that," and that's it. And then he leaves the room.
Right.
And that's you will put in there what he said. Now he's not a writer, but he does. He signs the checks.
He signs the check, and that's
the end of that.
Hollywood, right?
Yeah, and so if he says that scene is in, or that scene goes out, you know, that's it. By the way, you mentioned music. I mean, music almost saves some of these rotten films, frankly. But the music is great black musicians. So in order to make the thing have a wonderful soundtrack.
They're singing that song Losing You, and that was like a
Mm-hmm. That was a huge record, you know what I mean? And
I mean, that's serious exploitation. You take the guy's music, he doesn't, I mean, he's lost control of her. He doesn't even exist anymore. So now you take that to polish up something that isn't worth polishing. But it so that's a kind of serious exploitation. We better ask you about something else burning here, and that is the issue of Colin Kaepernick. I'm impressed that black police officers demonstrated in front of the Brooklyn Bridge the other day with none other than Sir Pico, and all of them had T-shirts that said, "I'm with Cap." and the NAACP of Atlanta, Georgia, which is a kind of important chapter, they said, we're going to boycott the NFL if Kaepernick is not allowed to play. What have you been seeing? What do you think of this?
I yesterday checked on my email, and I got an email from Pam Africa, who is, you know, supports Mumia Abu-Jamal. I got an email from Rosemary Mealy, who is a big supporter of the Cuban Revolution. She, when Fidel Castro comes to New York, she introduces Fidel, and she's, you know, former Black Panther, so on and so forth. And I got an email from a woman by the name of D.D. Bridgewater, who is a great singer, and mm-hmm. she just found out that her roots were, she's a Fulani from, you know, I guess a Fulani mm-hmm. there in West Africa, and Marva Jackson, who used to live in Toronto, she's in Europe now.
Mm-hmm.
All of them telling me to support Colin Kaepernick. There's a campaign. And they're sending this video out. I guess it's coming from the police, but so you have the police, but these are the pastors in Huntsville, Alabama, telling people to support Colin Kaepernick. And not only support Colin Kaepernick, but to boycott watching NFL games
mm-hmm.
until they treat Colin Kaepernick with some respect.
Mm-hmm.
And this came, like I say, this is coming from a black woman in
these are veterans. These are people. This is not a shallow group of people who've written an essay. They put in their lives.
Yeah. And I was saying this is, I've never seen anything like this.
Well, I'm very impressed. I'm impressed with Marshawn Lynch, who is, he's Marshawn. And
Marshawn is out of Oakland, and he's a, I hear a whole lot of people talk about him in terms of how popular he is in the locker room. I mean, people love him because he's a he's always for the underdog, and he's helped a lot of people. I know people when he was in Oakland. I mean, he would drop money on them if they were doing, you know, good community work, and he's you know, they've demonized him that he's a crazy man, but. I was glad to see him get in the mix.
He reminds me of a lot of really great artists, actually, the way he conducts himself. He only speaks if he's ready to speak or wants to speak, and when he does, he puts it into exactly the words that he's comfortable with. And if you want to think about that, you can, or if you don't have to, he don't care. but you remember he was on Conan when he first he was retired. People were begging him to please come play again. He's one of the most exciting running backs in modern history, and because when Marshawn has the football, he you better look out. He's doing like a kid playing keep away. I'm not giving this thing up. And if you guys grab me, I'm going to take you along. A great running back, and you could watch him and tell this is a very strong personality. So anyhow, he had retired and he's on Conan, and Conan says, "What do you think of this thing with Kaepernick?" And he said, "Well, I'd rather sit down than stand up and be shot." He said, "Even with your hands up, you can get shot." And then that was the end of that. He didn't say, "And then I want to say further." He just said it. And in the back of my mind, I wonder, did he come back in order to make 2 points? He could still play if he wanted to, but also he can sit down if he wants to. And I notice the NFL, they're trying to smile their way through this, but this is not every weekend now. There's more and more sign of discomfort, a discontent amongst players, and not just black players, by the way. Also, the black players are calling out their white teammates, say, you know about this, and you know the issues, so do something.
Well,
and so some of them are starting to show a little bit of solidarity.
There's been a few white players that have, one, I know at least one, but I hope that trend continues. This is a time for people to stand up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great campaign. And by the way, list those people again. That you heard from, and because their message, we want people to know they're taking a stand for Kaepernick. Would you just tell us again?
There's a great singer by the name of D.D. Bridgewater. You can check
D.D. Bridgewater. We might play her later in the show. Yes. We'll see if we can find some.
D.D. Bridgewater, she has a rendition of Afro Blue, and she's spent a lot of time in Senegal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Rosemary Mealy out of New York City. She was a member of the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, every time Fidel Castro comes to town, used to come to New York, she would introduce him. Marva Jackson, who used to be the station manager at CKLN, and she's in England now. Mm-hmm. Pam Africa, who is...
Pam African. Africa,
yeah.
Pardon me.
Yeah, Pam Africa, Mumia Abuja, you know who's...
Yes.
She's behind Mumia... one of the voices behind Mumia Abu-Jamal's... freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mm-hmm.
They all sent me emails saying to support Colin Kaepernick separately. So I've never seen anything like it before.
Yeah, I really urge everybody go on the net. You could start by going. One of the things you could do is just write Kaepernick. His website, his tweets every day are very impressive. He has writers from all over the place making comments and. I know my rights. He started, a campaign. He puts his own money into it, a lot of his money. And here's a guy who is basically facing the end of his career as an athlete because he took a stand, and he still puts his money where his mouth is. And Atlanta NAACP is saying, boycott, I'm going to join. And I'm sure you are, Otis. Norman, thank you very, very much for joining us. It's been great talking to you.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll talk later.
All right. Take care.
This is Taylor Report. Just like I told you, CIUT. I remember the name, CIUT 89.5 FM. I guess we'll take a little break, and we'll come back, and we got more on this stuff.